You are listening to the Furler Bros Tech Podcast, episode 183. Facebook has a new message about video.
Episode 183 of the Furler Bros Tech Podcast. Today is the 29th of March, 2015. I'm Matthew Dean Furler, and my tough-as-mud brother is James Furler.
I don't know about tough-as-mud, but I'm pretty tough, I like to think.
Yeah.
But you did the tough mudder this weekend, huh?
That's entirely why I brought up that segue.
I like that. It's more like about yourself, but via me.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's cool. How far was the run this time?
This one was... They all go between 12 and 10 and a half miles. This one went 10 and a half. Hey, before we go any further...
Oh, yeah.
Thanks. This one was 10 and a half, and it was down in Los Angeles, California. Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was a new venue.
Nice. Was it good? Would you do it again?
Heck yeah. Well, it's tough. So what they do is they give you these different color headbands as you do. The first one you get an orange colored headband. The second time you get it's like blue or green, I think. And then your third time you get a blue one, and then your fourth time you get a yellow one. But 4 through 6, it's yellow headbands. It's not until you hit your seventh that you get the next color headband. And I got my first yellow headband this year.
Nice.
So I
got
to do at least 3 more and get to that next threshold of colors.
Man.
I will say in some ways it's the easiest one I've done yet. In other ways, it was not even close to the hardest one I've done yet, because the first time I did it, I weighed 300 pounds. But in some ways it wasn't as easy as the last one.
Is that because you push yourself a little bit, or the course was just that hard?
No, it was mostly just, you know, there was certain workouts that I focused on this time, and like I was training for my half marathon.
Right.
And so that gave me some perks and just some upper body stuff. But when it actually came to like time to run up hills and stuff, I hadn't done anything like that in the way of training in a while. And so it was like, it was a different type of running. So it was just, it was different. One of our cousins turned 29 today, and so he was down in Los Angeles with us, and so we were out till 2:30, and I didn't take a nap after the race. And so the fact that I was up that late after not taking the race, I feel is a huge testament to how far I've come physically that I was able to do that. Although I was a wet rag the entire night. I was so boring because I was just tired as could be, but I stayed up, so there's that. And I'm sore as could be today, so it is what it is.
Yeah.
But it was awesome. It was a lot of fun. Highly recommend it.
It's cool.
Good event.
Yeah, you keep recommending it. They don't do it up in Oregon.
I know. It drives me nuts, because I'd fly up to Oregon and do it with you.
Maybe this is an opportunity for you to spearhead one up, which might be a little difficult not being in the area. But
It would add some challenges, yes.
Yes. It would be... Dare we say tough? I'm sure those are everywhere.
Yeah, right.
Cool.
But
well, congrats.
Thank you.
Finishing that.
Life. I like talking to him about myself, but was there anything that you wanted to bring up in this phase?
No, I'm good, man.
Okay. All right, cool. Well, then in that case, James, we're not going to talk about stuff that is interesting that happens to us outside of the tech world. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, and by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
I work for HP, but do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
All right, I appreciate that.
Sorry, you're going to take a drink. I didn't.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, you were like right on that. My disclosure, I still own a significant portion of Apple Inc.
I always forget to disclose this. What do I have to disclose? Oh, I'm supposed to sign in again. I think I own Apple and Twitter.
Yeah, you know what? So what was that? They like logged us out. I don't remember my login information. I've only logged in once.
I should look that up.
I tried all of my normal like login information on it and didn't let me log in. I was upset. Wanted to see what it's worth, but it didn't work. I still own it for now.
But forever if you can never log back in.
Right, that's a good point. Touche. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we're all up in the social media. You can see cool pictures from like that Tough Mudder, where I'm being tough, and interesting quotes and stuff like that. I'm on Twitter at Matthew D. Furlow. I'm on Insta, which is at no, not at. It's just next to Wiggin 4, NextWiggin, and the number 4. And for, you know, that sort of stuff. And then if you want to just get more about our thoughts and whatnot, you can follow me on Medium, where I have officially posted my first profile, and that's at Matthew Dean Furlow, because I like to be just different enough where it's not easy.
I got to look that up. How do I get there? It's
Medium.com at Matthew Medium D. Furlow. Dean Furlow.
.com/@MatthewDean All spelled out, huh?
Yeah, I know. Like I said, I could just different enough, man. Just to keep it confused, keep it guessing.
Apple and Twitter, I confirmed. I found my login information. Nice picture of the universe. Did you take that? I'm kidding.
I did.
I did, man.
I took it from NASA.com.
The magic hammer. All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to read it. It's only a 2-minute read. That's doable.
Whoa, they tell you how long it is. That's crazy.
Yeah. I like it. Do I have a Medium thing? I feel like I should. Let me see here. It would be James Furlow. Oh, boom, I do. I just have not written anything. That's cool.
Oh, that's super boring.
Yeah.
It's awful, James. I'll bet it's at James Furlow is your magic.
It is, yes. Cool, man. I'm saving that off right now for a later read. And you should too, readers. Medium.com/@MatthewDeanFurlow. Cool. I am at James Furlow everywhere.
I was gonna say, perfect timing. Bring it back around.
Yeah. We are just over here on it tonight. Love it.
Dude, you don't even know.
You're exhausted, I could tell.
Yeah, it's like, I might go and make myself another cup of coffee while you're talking about one of these stories, because it's just like, it's so rough, because it's like, I keep trying to take naps, but it's like, I'm at that weird like point where it's just, it's not, I can't quite fall asleep yet. And I feel like I'd have to lay in bed for an hour to fall asleep. I'd be asleep for an hour and a half. I'd wake up. I'd be all groggy. It'd take me an hour to get back in game. And all of a sudden, like 3 hours have passed, and I haven't done anything. Mm. And I don't have that much time. When I was writing this post, I was trying to come up with the word tree trunk, but I couldn't remember what the word trunk was. And so I actually ended up Googling, what is the center of a tree called? It's sort
now,
of where I am.
What happened?
Tonight.
Tell me about that moment when you finally saw the word.
No. It was dread. I knew what was going to happen. I looked at it. I thought I spent like 30 seconds thinking about it. I was like, okay, I could sit here and keep thinking about this for like 5 minutes and maybe figure out what the center of a tree is called, or I could just Google it. And I looked at Google and I actually put my fingers on the keyboard and thought, I can't believe I'm about to do this. And I typed it out and I hit enter. And like, of course, the first one's like the anatomy of a tree. And I was like, come on, don't make me click on the link. This is going to be brutal. And then the next one, it actually had trunk in the description. I was like, oh, thank goodness.
It
was rough. It was a rough moment, man. It was a rough moment. Of where I am mentally.
That's funny. I was in ninth grade English class, and we had like some writing assignment. We were supposed to write something. And I had like the biggest brain fart in the world where I was spelling something out and I came to the word of. And I went like, O-V? What, of? It just doesn't look right. I was like, maybe? No? That's, and I mean, and I sat there and I tried like a whole bunch of different things and was finally like, what? I do not know how to spell this. What is wrong with me? And so I leaned over to the guy next to me and was like, this is going to sound so stupid, but how do you spell of? He was like, you mean O-F? I was like, yes, that's the word. Thank you. That's exactly how you spell that. Yes.
It's like, man. Oh, man. It's like a sense of relief and embarrassment of when you finally get it. Oh, yes. Man.
This is why we enjoy programming, because it is constantly that.
Oh, fright, jeez. Yeah, that moment of you finally getting you want to like hoop and holler. Like, yes, I got it.
Now for the next thing I don't know how to do.
Yeah, like, oh, man, that's right. There's another pile.
Yeah, that's good. Oh, man, that's good. Get me excited.
Okay, if you want to know more about the show, we're going to talk about all sorts of stuff today, and we're going to have and everything we talk about has an article associated with it. And by everything, we mean everything that we don't add our pearls of wisdom to. But if you do want to see the source material, it's available for you via our website, furloughbros.com. Go there, check it out. All the clicks and links, video for the podcast, audio for the podcast, whatever you need, just Google it. And, it's available at your fingertips. That's how we roll. Check her out. Check it out.
Yeah, it's good. That was my added value there.
Thank you. Dude. I appreciate it.
I'm going to have to drive this. I can already tell. All right. So, speaking of driving.
Oh, yes, that's right. I'm up first. Goodness gracious. So I like to brag about the fact about where I live. And
I know.
And so this is one of those moments where I shamelessly brag about where I live. So TechCrunch this week posted a YouTube video that was posted from the streets of Cali about the Tesla Model X spot on California highways. Tesla's pure electric SUV is nearing launch, and there's apparently at least one cruising around California. The video above shows a slightly camouflaged Model X near Palo Alto. The SUV looks good, even with the design elements covered up. So I was actually, the only reason I bring this up is because I was in Fremont, which for those of you who don't listen to the show and don't know this already, is the home of the Tesla factory. And I was pulling onto the freeway, and I pulled in behind one of those like semis that has a bunch of cars behind it. And I remember remembered looking up at the cars and seeing all of like the girls and everything all covered, and like everything was all covered and with white. If you go to the article, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. And I remember looking at it, thinking that's a really weird looking Tesla. What is the deal with that Tesla? But I didn't think too much about it. And then I saw this video and I was like, that's right. I saw it first. I saw it before anybody else. I just didn't know it and didn't take a picture. So you can't prove that I didn't. I'm just very excited about it. I'm stoked. I'm looking forward to seeing. I'm more stoked about a Tesla that I might eventually be able to afford. But at the same time, man, it's just cool seeing them push out further and further, more and more stuff.
That is cool, man. I'm excited for Tesla and what it is and what they are doing. It's pretty sweet.
For sure.
Pretty sweet. You know, you talk about, you know, going forward in time and, you know, and they're pushing things and in the future be able to, you know, to enjoy those. But there's also a past. Here's what I want you to do.
Hey.
Unless you had more to say about the story, I'm moving on. I just wanted to.
I was just about to say the past is mystery.
Okay.
The future is history. No. That's backwards.
The future is now? I don't know. Anyways.
Yeah, no, and the present is a gift. That's why they call it the present.
Yes. I want you to go to facebook.com/ okay. On this day. I'll spell it out. facebook.com/onthisday.
Boom.
All one word.
Sorry, this feature isn't available.
What? What's your problem?
Sorry, this feature isn't available. Matthew, thanks for coming to check out your memories. Currently, this feature isn't available to everyone. Awesome.
All right.
Go to your news feed. That's rough, man. That happens to me every time. You're always like, check out this cool new computer that Google gave me. Because I'm an early adopter and they let me have stuff. Check out this cool new feature that Facebook has. Check out this new stock buying thing. I'm the one who bought stock. Why did you get an invite first? What the heck, man? This is ridiculous. This is just, I am a second-class citizen.
This was so unexpected. Okay. All right. So I guess I'll describe it to you.
Thanks. This is going to be awesome. I feel great about this. Give me all the details.
Oh, man. All right. So Facebook has come out with this new service called On This Day that does exactly as you would describe. It would say, like, here are posts that were, you know, from you or about you on this day some number of years ago. So, like, for example, apparently, 2 years ago today, I was just coming back from a Mexico trip.
Nice.
And so I just crossed into good old Mexico, or back into the United States. 3 years ago, our sister blamed you and I for her movie choices over the last 2 weeks, which were all action movies.
Probably seems fair.
Let's see here. 4 years ago, I asked the question, why are hotel TV remotes so horrible? makes sense. Let's see here. I also had a bunch of photos that were added to me. I became friends with somebody. More photos from more Mexico trips. But yeah, and it goes, let's see, I've got 7 years ago. I wrote, today seems to be a nice day with the weather. Hopefully it keeps up. And 8 years ago, I was extremely excited. Apparently. I didn't really elaborate on why. I just was.
That's good to know. That's good to know. I wonder what I was doing on this day last year.
I don't know. You can't find out yet, apparently. But you can check it out eventually on facebook.com/onthisday. And if you want, you can get notifications. So it'll send you a little digest each day telling you, here's how your day was X number of years ago. So now, you obviously can't do that right now. Bummer. I do a service that, I don't even remember what it's called because I've got it all automated now. But essentially, I signed up for this service that picks a random Instagram photo that I took some time ago and then emails it to me. So I get a daily Instagram photo that I took. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And it tells me, like, here's what it was, here who liked it, here's who liked it, any comments, if I tagged in a location, here's where it was. And then I have that email forwarded to my RSS reader, Feedly, so that I can just, you know, flip it through the news, go, oh, cool, picture from way back. And,
back in the day.
Yeah, and it's, and like I said, it's kind of random. So it's not like, here's the picture you took a year ago. It's just kind of whatever. So I know you can't use this one right now. I'm just going to keep rubbing that in. But you instead can use something called Time Hop. It's an iOS app where what you do is you sign up for it, and then you can connect Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Foursquare, Dropbox Photos, iPhoto, your iPhone camera, and Google Plus. You can add all of those accounts to it, and it essentially does the exact same thing.
You want to know what it's going to get from Google Plus? Nothing.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. Let's see here. So for that one, tells me what the weather was 4 years ago. Amazing.
That's useful.
Apparently, in addition to me checking in back into the United States, I also checked into a Carl's Jr. that day.
Delicious.
Facebook didn't think that was worth noting, but that's cool. I probably didn't share it. It's probably what happened. 4 years ago, I checked into HP, just going to work one day.
You live an exciting and compelling life, James.
Yes, yes. Let's see here. A bunch of photos and stuff. Let's see here. 6 years ago, I sent a... Jesse went to Mexico without me, actually. It's clearly spring break week, so it's actually interesting.
Oh, yeah. That's, you know, that's funny.
It's going to be funny. But anyways, Time Hop is an app that you can download, and similar stuff. You can get a daily notification. It's kind of fun. You know, we've created all of this content, which for the most part is meaningless other than it serves as like, it's kind of like a throwback Thursday every day, essentially, for yourself. And then obviously you can reshare those things back and be like, oh, check out what I did 6 years ago or whatever.
Yeah,
it's kind of fun getting into space. They were saying it was the guy who was interviewing Facebook about it. They're like, so this is kind of like exactly like Time Hop, but only for Facebook, huh? I was like, no, it's totally different. Like, yeah, except they're like almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
And he was like, except no. In essence, they're like, we're acknowledging the whole Throwback Thursday thing, and we're just making it easy for people and, you know, whatever. We're just engaging with folks. They're like, yeah, it looks like Time Hop.
Yeah, except for that part where it's Time Hop. Oh.
Yeah, but pretty funny. I do like, so Facebook's I like because it will look at ones that I'm tagged into, not necessarily just my posts, but so I like that part of it, which Time Hop doesn't get. But I do like that Time Hop does all the other social networks as well, which is cool. Anyways, check it out. Time Hop on an iOS device or eventually facebook.com/onthisday.
I must have signed up for next week. Oh, that's why. I was going to say, I must have signed up for Instagram before they were bought by that one company that we were just talking about, Facebook. Because my Facebook login credentials aren't working for...
What are those? Okay.
You almost got me. I almost went for it. But yeah, because my Facebook login credentials are like the oldest things I have on the internet. Yeah, this thing just keeps asking to go to different stuff, different log into this, log into that.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise. Cool. Let's see. I realize you were talking and I just want to, Foursquare, forget that. Dropbox probably could do that. iPhone is connected. No. Mm-hmm. How do you connect to iPhoto?
Yeah, well, that's their new service. You probably don't have to worry about that right now.
Okay, good. Well, then let's just continue. Okay, got it. Jeez Louise, just get to the juiciness.
Good.
This is terrible. Okay. Oh, look at that picture of our cousin and some. Oh yeah, that makes sense. It's Timmy's birthday.
There you go. Yeah,
I was down in Los Angeles this time. Timmy flipping us off. That's awesome.
There you go.
That is pretty awesome. There's a bunch of pictures of Timmy flipping us off. I love how, that was my Facebook profile picture for quite a while. Pictures of things on fire. Cause you know, that's what I'm into. Chelsea was just reminiscing with me about that last week, about the fact that, remember when your Instagram was just pictures of fire? That's so lame. It was really cool. Okay. It was hip and forward thinking.
Which is why I stopped.
Yeah, exactly. I was, you know, genius isn't appreciated in his life. That's cool. It's a cool service. It's like you said, it's like the daily Throwback Thursday. I probably won't delete that app until Thursday. Anyways, so speaking of Facebook, these guys did some stuff this week.
Yeah, dude, F8.
F8. Is there an explanation for what F8 is? Like, what's the deal with that name?
Why F8?
Is it? I mean, I get it that it looks like a B. It's kind of like a coder B. It's a it's elite code, as it were. Is that all it is?
Facebook F8, pronounced F8. Is a mostly annual conference. That's got to be it, right?
Yeah.
Because it's been the same name every time. Let's see here. They don't really say what the name F8 derives from the tradition at Facebook of having 8-hour hackathons.
Oh, okay. All right.
There you go.
I'll let it slide.
Cool. I like yours better, but, you know, whatever.
I'll allow it. Yeah. Cool. So they did some cool, they made some big announcements this week.
Yeah, they did.
Do I want to?
This is the week of Facebook. We had Apple a few weeks ago. This week's Facebook. In a little bit, we'll have Google.
Yeah, it's Google's turn.
I hope Google's is awesome, not just lame.
I hope so. Yeah.
It's got to be.
It's hit and miss with them sometimes, some years. Some years it's just like they're jumping out of
planes. Yeah, but last year was the dud year, which is why this year.
I'm going to say.
This year.
Well, the year before that, they were, like I said, they were jumping out of planes. They had, like, heads-up display equipment. It was, like, all super cool.
We're going to change the world.
Got ahead of themselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
They got a little bit ahead of themselves. Everybody was like, what's the dealio? But, yeah, I'm excited. Anyways, let's talk about Facebook. So, video. They clearly feel like they've got a handle on pictures. And I would argue they're probably right. Between Facebook and Instagram, they're like the most photo to internet service out there. Yeah.
I would agree. Yeah.
You know, obviously
it's so lame that none of it's searchable or very little of it is.
Yes. But I would agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is honestly, I think, one of the big reasons why I'm hesitant to rely on Facebook so much for what they did announce this week that they're trying to make a big deal about, which is Facebook videos. You know, in the picture space, there's your phone, which has a certain amount of gravitas. There's Google Plus, which they're going to break out the photos aspect of that as they slowly kill Google Plus. They've got, Flickr is obviously a big component out there. But in the video space, there's pretty much YouTube for user-generated video. There's a couple of more insignificant sites. You've got, like, LiveLink, LiveLeak, which all of their videos are just rehosted onto YouTube so that you can actually get them at a decent bandwidth. you know, Vivio is a... once again, Vimeo, they're more,
but yeah,
Vimeo, really. You're right.
Not Venmo. That's the payment service of PayPal, but Vimeo.
Right. I get so confused.
Today, I realized that today. I was like, wait, these are two separate things.
that's why
and they're like very different things.
So there's Venmo. Is this the one that I was thinking?
I don't know.
Yeah, Venmo. Venmo is like pretty much there's Meta Cafe, which is sort of a cesspool of disgustingness nowadays. is there anything else out there?
On Amazon,
Yeah, but yeah, I guess.
Dude, it's YouTube. I mean, come on.
It's YouTube, right? There's YouTube, and Facebook's not happy about that. They want to take over that turf.
Yeah, totally.
Exactly.
I get it.
So this week they announced what was a big step in that direction, 360-degree video.
That's not where I expected you to go, but cool.
Well, I think I'm excited about it. But I guess technically the bigger deal is embedded videos everywhere on the internet.
Which again, okay. How do I want to describe this? From a consumer standpoint, okay, cool, I guess. And it will make it easier for people to embed third-party videos on their websites. However, I highly doubt that, professional in a sense, like they're trying to get paid to do this, content producers are going to use Facebook. And here's why. YouTube is super powerful because not only can you put up a video that's pretty high quality that can be played anywhere, which is nice, but it has you can title it, you can add a description, you can add links within a description, you can also tag that sucker. Plus, it's owned by Google, and so therefore it does really well in the search rankings. And so it's like, so a lot of content marketers use YouTube as another source of traffic for their website and to add authority to their websites. And if Facebook doesn't add that, which I'm assuming no, because all they allow is a description and they like everything kind of locked in anyways, I just don't think you'll see professional content marketers adopting it. That's my opinion. Now, users like people taking videos of dress colors that are up for debate, they'll use it because they don't care because it's easy.
Yeah, it's a, you know, yeah.
Like, we're not going to use it because, you know, inside of each of our videos, not only do we have the titles and we can change the cover photo, but, you know, we can add the description. We can add a link back to the website, which is super powerful. You know, there's things that we can do that we have control over that Facebook won't allow.
I can say, but I mean, the reality, yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. Is that true, though? I mean, okay, let me pose this as an alternative universe. So yes, it's not going to be a YouTube clone. So there's going to be a different workflow to the whole thing. But let's say you've got the Furlough Bros Facebook page, which I highly recommend you go and visit.
Facebook.com/Furlough Bros.
Boom. That's what I'm talking about. And on that page, we've got a bunch of links to pretty much every podcast. What if instead it was the link to the video? And in there, stop yelling at me, Facebook. You've got the Furlough Bros podcast, a new photo album, photo, you know, and you've got all the stuff. You've got the information that is linked on it. You're able to add a description to the video and stuff, and it's hosted as a post, which is on our main page. So it's, I just wonder, it's like YouTube is so dedicated videos that it's almost hard to have like a streaming conversation of different posts. If you were going to be a multimedia, you know, let's say you wanted a multimedia platform, right? And you did articles, you did notes, you did posts, you did short thoughts, you did pictures, you did a whole bunch of different content, and you want it to all be in one stream. Now, what you could do is you could put it on YouTube and then embed it in your personal website. I think, you know, but if Facebook's strategy is to say, we want to be your landing page for all of your content. So, like, because that's basically what it is for individuals, right? It's you don't have a personal web page that people link to, you have a Facebook page. And for most people, that's good enough. And they're sitting there. Is there a niche for content creators that aren't building their own website and using it as a major source of driving it to their own website, but rather are saying, no, go to our Facebook page and follow us on Facebook. And we'll just have our entire thread of stuff that you can check out with mixed media on our Facebook page.
Yeah, I guess.
Don't seem so excited about it. Another thought that I would have is they didn't talk about profit sharing, right? I mean, that's a big part of why people, you know, who post on YouTube use YouTube is because you get paid for a portion of the advertising dollars that YouTube gets paid when they use your content. That's the arrangement. Whereas Facebook doesn't have anything like that. They don't pay content creators for creating content. So I would sit there and go, maybe this is part of a longer term strategy where they're trying to slowly roll out the features and create a really robust, strong infrastructure that eventually will parallel and battle YouTube. But I get the feeling that their whole strategy with this is that they're saying, we're okay with YouTube being YouTube. We think there's another giant niche out there because Facebook doesn't like to do anything small, especially on this kind of a scale, where they think there's another giant chunk of the market out there that would rather use Facebook and use Facebook as their primary platform than use YouTube. And I wonder if they're right. I would guess they're right, to be honest.
Yeah, that's probably true, I guess. Yeah, I mean, they'll have tons of videos, and it makes sense that this is probably part of a longer-term strategy. I guess, too, you think about, like, the fact that they bought Oculus. They're thinking a lot about video.
Yeah.
And there's a huge incentive to get them everywhere.
It was a joke the big announcement was 360-degree video, but I really do think it's important to bring that up along with it. And it did get a little bit of criticism in the blogosphere about the fact that it was like, oh, this is kind of weird. Who's going to use this? Well, what's this for? The concept that, you know, it was like,
how many video cameras did it require?
Oh, they're crazy. How many?
Like 27 or something.
Yeah, and there are different companies that are coming out with different rigs that allow you to do it. But even YouTube announced 360-degree video like 2 weeks ago. So it's clearly, you know, Facebook's not alone, but Facebook is has a huge vested interest in being able to be ready with content when the day comes that the Oculus is released to the public. And they clearly have a strategy here. And my question is, can we sort out what their strategy is before they tell us? And that would be my guess. I would guess that their whole thing is they don't want to put themselves in a position that YouTube is in. They don't want to share profits with content creators. They want to get to the point where it's, you know, the benefit of sharing content with Facebook is the pleasure of getting likes, you know?
You know, it's funny. I was going to hold off on this article till the end, but I think now's a good time to do it. So Facebook has been doing this experiment with Vox Media, VOX, and they've actually started where Vox is literally hosting their content on Facebook. They're not publishing it on their website. They're publishing the article, pictures, video, everything on Facebook. And the idea is that Facebook runs ads and they split the revenue with Vox for that. Yeah. And they were saying like it's very reminiscent of this idea of like the internet TV or just TV if you think about it, where it's like if you wanted to go watch an example I heard was like Modern Family. You don't go like on the television. You don't go to some Modern Family place. You go to ABC, and that's the channel. And that channel manages all the content for you. They went, Facebook is the new AOL. I mean ABC. And so,
was that an intentional Freudian slip or
maybe? Okay. And, but that idea is you go to Facebook and then Facebook's the one who says, here's what you want to see right now. We've got it. We own it. And we're sharing the revenues with the content creators. And so all you got to do is go to one place.
They're reclaiming we think of channel as, we tend to think of channel as the station or not the station, but the frequency. What channel am I tuning into is actually what frequency bandwidth am I tuning into. Yeah. And that's been expanded, obviously, as cable has become more, and it doesn't really mean the same thing anymore insofar as, but it is the channel from which the content is provided. And yeah, Facebook wants to become a channel. Facebook wants to become the channel if they could get away with it. But at the very least, they want to be a significant channel. And I actually think that this is an important and sweeping part of their entire announcement. I feel like you can't separate that idea from any given thing that they announced this week.
Yeah, they're very much like, to me, it came out like... Not necessarily putting Google on notice, because I think they've actually they're looking beyond that right now. Even though on the surface of it, there's a lot of things that they seem to be competing with Google against. But more just saying like, we want to own it all. Yeah. We want to own all the data. We want to own, we We own your status updates. We own your photos. We want to own your video. We want to own the media. Eventually, we want to own your messages. And you know what I mean? Like, they're very much like, we just want to own it all. We want to be that all-inclusive AOL walled garden.
Right.
Which will work for a little while.
It will. And I think so. I do wonder about the fact that it's like, they clearly want that, you know, the whole idea of the embedded video and being able to take Facebook. The reason why they're allowing Facebook to have embedded content elsewhere on the internet is because it's a recognition of the fact that certain content creators will not use the service unless they can mirror it to other websites. And YouTube lets them do that, so they'll use YouTube. If they wanted to use Facebook, but they also wanted it to host it on their website, that wasn't an option. So that is buying off a couple of other users. It also, you know, the nice part about it for YouTube is that YouTube embedded content drives people to YouTube. So it works as advertising and it works as an incentive, you know, to try to get people to come on, which is why I think they're letting it happen. But like I said, they're obviously not serious about trying to compete with YouTube. Otherwise, they'd be telling you this is how you can make more money per click by coming with us, or you can get more clicks by coming over to us and make more money. Because for serious content creators, that's the only question that they're going to have is, how can I make more money using your service than I can using Google service? And Facebook's not even trying to compete with that. They're clearly trying to do something else.
Yeah, totally.
Which is an interesting idea, because it's like, what exactly are they trying to do? It's clearly, and I think the Vox illustration is an interesting one, where it's like, clearly they're saying there is at least some place for content creators who are going to make a living off of this, and they're willing to split revenue with that. But at the same time, they're not willing to act as a, you know, one of the beautiful parts about YouTube is that it acts as sort of an entrepreneurial platform. You can start, you know, if you've got time and a video camera, you can start making content for YouTube, and then eventually
time and a phone, you know.
Right. Yeah. You know, and there's a thousand examples of it. And, you know, Overly Attached Girlfriend's the only one that it's coming to the tip of my head, where, you know, got really lucky with a meme that took off on Reddit, became a bigger strategy, and she turned that into a YouTube channel that actually pays her bills, and she does all sorts of whatever content. Facebook's not offering that as an option to somebody like her, though, which means that, you know, so if you did post your stuff to Facebook originally and people got, and it drove a bunch of content to your web, to your Facebook page, and got people liking you and whatever your channel was, where does that leave you? Like, how would you make money off of that? And they don't give a clear option to that. So it's like, even for the entrepreneurs who are looking to become an internet star, Facebook isn't offering a clear roadmap for that. Which means that it really is sort of relegated to personal use, where somebody like me, who for my personal site, stuff that I'm not hoping to turn into a internet hit, I would be willing to post it there. I don't know. Obviously they don't want to have to share money with anybody. That's their goal. That's the big goal. But I wonder if they're cutting I keep coming back to thinking, are they trying to have their cake and eat it too? Are they trying to get people to host their content on it without realizing that, wait a second, I'll never get paid for this? until they're too huge, and then you have to figure out another revenue model on your own? Or do they have another strategy here saying, no, we're putting together the pieces slowly. We're acknowledging the fact that we're not going to compete against anybody else in the market. We're not trying to right now, but this is part of something that is to come. And part of that requires us to, whatever's going to come, we're not going to be able to figure out how to share revenue at the end of the day. Or we've got a model that doesn't require us to share revenue because you will allow you to embed your own advertising. I don't even know. You know what I mean? I feel like we're missing a piece of the puzzle here. They're too smart. They're too good at what they do to have this be the end of it, because it doesn't really make sense as a holistic strategy. It's not Snapchat here, you know?
Yeah, that's very true. Though, I mean, to be fair, we see them come out with apps all the time where you're just like, what was this?
Yeah, I don't know. I think video is a bigger deal, though. I feel like, obviously, they experiment with stuff. And maybe that's all it is it's just an experiment. They're going to say, no, we're going to try to give you all the tools that you get with YouTube. Or we're going to give you enough of the tools that you would get with YouTube where you could use it kind of like YouTube and just see if it takes off without a revenue, clear revenue model. Maybe people will figure it out on their own. They'll do their own ads in video, and they'll get paid directly from the people they're doing advertisements for, as opposed to us embedding advertisements before and after. Maybe that's the strategy.
Maybe.
And see if it works. I don't know. It's an interesting question that they've got coming, that they're trying to answer here. But
yeah, it's tough because, I mean, clearly YouTube's doing it well. You know,
making Google any money.
True, but they're good at making content creators happy, I guess.
That's very good.
You know, we're like, you know, you brought up something where it was like, you know, you could do advertising in the stream, you know, and YouTube allows for that, right? Where you can create, like, for example, when we did this real estate event a year ago, at the end of the video, we were like, sign up for the event. We had a big button there, and then I was able to create a little clickable space on top of it, and boom, people would click on it, and they'd send off, you know, they'd jump off to the website to go sign up, you know, and I don't really know if it worked, but I felt good about the fact that I made it. And, you know, and that's better than, you know, in the post saying, go here, click the link, because people don't do that.
Right.
I don't know. We'll see. I don't think it's available yet, is it? We can't embed
videos. I don't think so. I don't really know, though.
When it becomes available here, let's see. Trying to find it. What we'll have to do is, I don't even know if there's limits, you know, to it. Can you search for video? I don't even know how to do that. Like, is there a place to search for Facebook videos? But like, just show me videos. Is that a thing?
I have no idea, man. I have no clue.
Because I was gonna say, I mean, I'd be more than happy to. Assuming it's big enough, right? We could take this show or a future show and upload it.
It's true.
See what that's like. I wonder what their limits are. Do you think it would tell us somewhere? Let's see. Furlabros Tech Podcast. Photo/video upload photos videos. Well, that doesn't say anything about there's probably a limit. I guess. Well, we'll look it up later. We'll try it. We'll see what it's like.
Awesome. I like it. But yeah, spherical video is the I guess the other one is this is clearly a move. It's, you know, preparation for Facebook. They're actually Pockets. Fun. They're actually kind of fun, just like even on the TV screen, like scrolling around and dragging around as you move through stuff and trying to catch different things that are going on in the scene. But
yeah, I, Man, I think, what was it? Google's enabled it on their Android phones, if I remember correctly, where you could do like spinning videos somehow. I didn't fully understand.
Yeah, it uses the gyroscope, so it looks like you're looking around the scene when you move the phone around.
Yeah, for viewing, but I was talking about capturing.
Oh, yeah, like their bubble capture thing. Yes,
yeah, they have that. But again, I think of it in terms of like for doing in-store virtual tours. It would be pretty sweet if you were like, again, imagine like you were giving a tour of a, I don't know, let's say a rental, and you can give the guy a tour, and you know, and I could, like, for example, someone could be holding the camera, and I could be giving a tour. Here's the living room. Here's this nice feature. Check this out. Here's the kitchen. Look how big and awesome it is. All the storage space. And so they can follow me if they want, but then they have that option to look around at other places, you know,
right,
if they wanted to, and, you know, and I make sure to, you know, take your time. So it's a guided tour that get to know me. I could answer questions in the video. I could point out special features, but then they're not just beholden to what it is that I want to show them.
Right, they can look around.
Yeah, yeah, to really like simulate that in-person experience, because that's exactly what happens, right? You get the tour, but then you're allowed to kind of wander around where you want. I think that would be pretty cool, pretty cool.
That would be cool. I think that's what they want to get to eventually, something along those lines at the very least.
Yeah, I know there's those... there's a camera I want to buy, but it's like $400, and it's just, you know, that's just enough where I'm like, Google Spheres on my phone is free, but it's a camera that essentially it's got two lenses on either side of it that are both like, it's crazy, like 200 degree fields of view.
Hey, that equals 400 degrees.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And so there's actually an overlap, and so it can, right, so it can make sure to mesh, you know, mesh up the pictures perfectly. And you literally, you put this thing down, and you can put it on a regular tripod, and then they're like, you obviously want to leave the room, and then you connect to your phone via Bluetooth, and so you can click snap the photo, and it'll just boom, you know, take the picture, and it's all stitched perfectly. And which you're like, that's pretty cool.
What's that called? That sounds really cool.
Yeah, it is, oh boy, I can do this. Let's see, if we do, what is it called? It's Google View? Is that what it would call? Google, what was that? What was that called? Not Google Earth, Maps, Street View, boy. Somewhere is, here, I know how to figure it out. Is being like, James, come on. It's so easy. What I gotta do. That's the problem, is it's all like, it's not obvious at all. Let's see here. I feel like this is one that has it. See, I've actually got to go to like one of my listings where I have it set up. Here we go.
Ladybug 2 360 degree Firewire spherical camera. No.
Photosphere, yes. What is this feature called? Ah, oh, this is killing me. Here, it's a... what do we call this? We'll go...
This is really good.
Photo...
content right here.
Sphere... what?
So this is really good content right here, us Googling stuff. I don't know. I guess it's not...
it's called Views. Know. This thing's killing me.
Okay, let's, you know...
whatever. We can, whatever.
Yeah, it's not that important. But, important, yeah, in principle, I get what you're saying. I like it. I want it. $400? I might get it. What the
heck? It's a Ricoh Theta. Boom. I got it.
You finally got it. You were so close, you could tell. Interesting.
Theta360.com.
Yeah, I, you know, honestly, I think, and it's funny. The one thing that I'm wondering is if we're gonna find like there's a standard codec that everybody kind of falls to with what these are, because it's like the MP3 is universal for, you know, music. Pretty much everybody can play an MP3, or you got like the JPEG or the PNG for different like photo stuff. And even with like 3D photos, there's sort of a there's a couple of different standard photos, and most viewers are able to, most cameras take those pictures, most viewers display those pictures pretty well. What would be unfortunate is if it took us a couple of years to get to sort of a standard for spherical videos too, because, you know, there's a bunch of headsets that are going to be coming out here, and it would drive me nuts if I wouldn't be able to put on my Morpheus with my PS3 and go take one of your virtual tours because it's hosted on Google and it's a different codec, and that's inevitably going to happen.
Don't even joke around about that.
Well, but yeah, it's going to be brutal because everybody's want to get, they realize that if they use a standard file format, well, then it's going to be, somebody else might, can't keep it in my own walled garden. I got to share the content. There's a chance that they'll use, if there's a special codec that Facebook uses for their spherical videos and pictures, then they can say, well, I guess you're just going to have to go out and buy, Oculus if you want to be able to see these. And
well, I guess I'm trying to think about YouTube. You know, they accept all sorts of file formats, but once you upload it, it's in YouTube. And then it just so happens that they become ubiquitous where you can watch YouTube videos all over the place. You know, so that's, I can see something similar to that where,
which would be okay if there was
same types of files, and then you upload it. You'd have to upload it all over the place potentially.
I would say it would be okay if Facebook made a Sony portal that worked on your PlayStation 4, but I could see them not doing that because they have a competitive product, and that will be really annoying. It's just going to be super annoying because that's going to happen, and it's going to be like, and I'm just going to sit there and go, this is really easy to do. I know that this is easy to build a standard. There probably already are standard formats that handle that sort of thing, but you're going to use something special specifically so that you're going to make a high bar to entry to access your content unless I buy your hardware, Apple. And it drives me nuts.
I'm sorry.
I realize everybody was thinking it, like, how can you be an Apple fanboy and have that rant? So I just wanted to tip my hat. Yeah, I know. It drives me nuts when anybody does it. And and the worst part about Apple is sometimes they push standards because it plays to their advantage, and then other times they don't because it plays to their advantage. And I just can see in this case, I think Google is really going to be incentivized to have a really cool portal that works for Sony. Yeah, it's going to be a YouTube portal for virtual headsets, but for the Morpheus. But it'll still be cool and it'll work really well. Whereas I think I get the feeling that Facebook, because they actually have a piece of hardware that they are fully behind, they're going to say, "No, you can't do that." And that'll bum me out. Something serious, but just we'll wait for it. That time will come.
We'll wait for it.
We'll deal with it. So they also did some cool stuff on another part of their platform. Something that is clearly no longer Facebook. It is a piece of Facebook, but it's its own thing. Mm-hmm. Messenger.
Yeah. So they're going to allow third-party people to build apps for Messenger.
Yes.
Weird.
It is weird. Yet at the same time, when somebody – I read an article, and I don't think I linked it. No, I did. I totally – it's that extra one that I added to the bottom of that. It took me a while to understand what they were trying to do, and I didn't get it. I didn't get it. I don't think anybody got it at first until somebody pointed it out. And Facebook finds strength as a family, not an app. Or was it that article, or was it a different? Doesn't matter. Basically, what happens is Facebook realized they made a mistake with Snapchat. Snapchat is doing better than they wanted it to. They have not been able to replicate the Snapchat feature set and knock them down a peg.
They can replicate it. They just can't knock them down a peg.
Yeah, exactly. And although they are clearly still the dominant mobile platform, Snapchat has a bigger piece of the pie than they want them to. And so they came up with this clever strategy, and it is very clever, where they will offer a really, really useful, cool tool for startups that like Snapchat, where they'll say, look, coming up with your own communication protocol is difficult. There's a whole infrastructure that comes with managing all of that. And that's tough, man. And so we're going to try to make it easy for you. And so you don't have to build all of it, because we've got the web tools, we've got the mobile tools, we've got all these different tools. It's all over the place, and different platforms. The infrastructure's already there. What we're going to let you do is come in and build an app, like, I don't know, for example, Snapchat. And we're going to let you use our tools to build those sorts of apps and make it really, really lower the bar to entry for building out your cool idea. And then this cool idea takes off, you make a bunch of money, and everybody is happy, and we own you. And I think this is their way of acknowledging that things that Snapchat did better than it wanted to, than they wanted it to. And this is sort of giving platform developers the ability to come in and build an app and build an app on a platform that already exists, leverage that platform, and sell their soul to Facebook, as you so eloquently described, be the channel.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess that's a possibility. I mean, I could definitely see that. I just also thought of it as, they just want to get you using it more.
Well, I would agree that that's probably part of the, at the very least, that is arguably a good reason to do that. It's just a weird concept. Like, what do you mean you're going to build a platform for apps to build on top of Messenger? Like, what the heck are you talking about, Facebook? Like, what does that even mean? Other than what are the big – Facebook has a couple of things that they think are big, right? Photos are big. Messaging is big. Video is big. They think those are super important. And a lot of these moves seem to be trying to acknowledge the fact that they are not going to come up with everything. And one of the biggest places, like, video and pictures are easy. You just make for them to come up with a strategy. You make videos and pictures super easy to host on Facebook, super easy to share, and that's good enough. But the fighting messaging was a more difficult problem, right? Because if you had a really unique take on messaging, like the disappearing comment or the disappearing picture, you couldn't just use Facebook's messaging app to do that. You couldn't easily integrate that. It couldn't become part of a holistic solution. And yet they want to be the channel. They want to host all of your content. They want to be the whole thing. So they're basically saying, we're going to let you inherit all of the functionality of Messenger into your cool app and use it as like a app platform. It's so weird, man. It's really weird. It's hard to really, I guess what we're going to need to see is a couple of applications that actually take advantage of it.
So I see a couple of really obvious use cases. Number one would be like customer service. And, so you've got a business and they're like, you got a question? Talk to us. That's not really necessarily a platform, but it's in that sense of like, they just straight up, they either have it somehow, Messenger is on their own little back end system, and and you're just able to talk to them inside of Messenger. I could see that. I could see video, Skype saying, yeah, we'll get in on this. And, now you can do a one-to-one video conversation, and because I think you can already do audio, that's built in. I could also see it as like a notification thing. You know, download this app and we'll send you a notification. Essentially, we'll send you a message anytime there's something new available. I don't know.
Yeah.
And in that notification, sure, you could reply back saying, thanks for the update. Or there's also a link that you can click that'll take you straight to the app. And you can go check it out, something like that. There's obviously going to be new media types as well. You know, which is kind of similar to what you were talking about. Could you imagine an Instagram type of thing where you take a picture, add a filter, and you send it as a message? You know, it's a, instead of saying share on Facebook, it's share on Messenger.
Right.
You know,
and then you get a group that it just sends it, or a thread it sends it to.
Yeah. Yeah. Potentially something like that. I don't know. Those are some things that I could see right away that is how it could be used. I don't think you'd ever see it. Maybe, I guess in theory you could have it on like a website and it's a little pop-up box, you know, like you've seen, they're like, hey, I'm available to chat. What's your question?
Right.
In theory, it could be that, I guess. That sounds dumb, but
it does sound dumb.
You know, if they were really smart too, they could figure out how, you know, like, let me think. Like, you might have, like, say you're looking at a restaurant and you might want to know, what time do you close? And I suppose that could be on the website or it could be in their app or whatever, right? You just search for them in the Facebook directory. I don't know. And somehow you find them and you send them that text message or that message over Facebook. And some other companies set it up where it either rings a phone or it sends that message to a ton of people. And, you know, like they'll do it like emails, right? And it adds it to the queue and whoever replies first, everyone else can see the reply. So like, okay, cool. I don't have to do it or something.
Right.
And, you know, and so some of the third parties managing that process, and Facebook's really that, just that back end, or it's the customer facing end and they've got their whole back end stuff. You know, it's connected to a CRM system of some sort that tracks communications with people. I don't know. Obviously sending all sorts of other stuff, right? You got, I think money was one of the examples they gave there.
Yeah.
I don't know what else would be.
Yeah, it's
digitally sendable. Send a fax.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. That could work, actually. I don't know.
It's funny. I had this game idea that was kind of foundationally was built around the idea of a messaging app. And I've been sharing it with friends and stuff. And as I've been taking these classes on iOS development and stuff, and all of a sudden this announcement came out. And I ran it through my head asking, you know, would it make sense to look into this and try to build it on top of, like, one of the core mechanics is the ability to message friends back and forth, and part of what you're messaging will advance the gameplay, right? It's actually, the game is carried out not necessarily as a text-based game, but the interaction, it would be built around a messaging app. And I was like, man, maybe that would make sense to check this out, use it on Facebook. And I was like, but then again, I am selling my soul to Facebook. Like, I don't know. I think those examples are good examples because they're easy in that it lets Facebook do a lot of the heavy lifting and you can quickly integrate that stuff, but it doesn't mess with the core of what you're trying to do. I think there is an advantage there.
Yeah, we'll see. It's one of those where they built it, they're not even really sure what's going to happen. I think the big deal is going to be able to communicate with companies, individuals to companies.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
Like, to be able to do, I mean, could you imagine like someone sets out an angry tweet and, you know, to a company of some sort, and then they're like, hey, let's actually talk about this. Send us a message on Messenger, you know, and then you can have a longer conversation, you know, with that person. and really solve the problem potentially.
Yeah, which would be pretty cool. Maybe that would be useful as a company. What's this? Oh, you got an article about Path?
Yeah, so you remember Path.
I do remember Path. I think I actually still have it on my phone as an app.
They've pivoted a couple of times. And
why? Just because nobody used their app and they couldn't get it to be something?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it didn't make the cut. It's not on my phone anymore.
Yeah, they started out as a social network where you stayed in touch with your closest friends. And then it got into like kind of life logging. Remember, like, I'm listening to
I remember that part where it was like, yeah, it was like a what's on your path sort of deal.
I woke up. Yeah, I'm going to bed now. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then
super exciting.
Yeah. And then eventually they pivoted with the goal of making it easy for users to communicate with restaurants, theaters, and other businesses, which is what I just described.
Yeah. They're a company that, I feel like if you're really inside the tech echo chamber and you pay a lot of attention, you actually think that this is
this is news.
This is a big deal, but like nobody uses Path. I know. It's just one of those companies that you like to watch because you're like, why did we think this was going to be cool? Like, why did we? Where was the evidence?
It was well designed.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. But nothing ever happened with it.
I know.
You know what it was? They never paid people to use it. And more I'm becoming a believer that if you really want your social network to have a fighting chance of taking off, you really do have to get into the mindset of, no, you got to pay. You got to find cool, popular people, fraternities and sororities, on college campuses, or, you know, movie stars, or politicians, if the case is right, radio hosts, people that are kind of your center fixtures in like locally and in a big way, and pay them to use your social network and be movers and shakers that way. And otherwise, you go the way of Path, which is a path less traveled, as it were.
Oh, man.
And you know what the worst part about it is? As I always joke about this show, we've got more listeners than I have friends, which is doubly impressive because none of my friends listen, which is also important in this conversation because I've had like five or six friends that have worked for Path at various times, and I've always been like really excited for them when they told me, I'm working for Path. I was like, yeah. They're a cool company, really good idea. And the whole time I'm thinking, nobody uses that. How is that company still around? Where do they get money from? Like, what the heck is this? Is this Crazy Town? I can't believe they still exist. Oh, jeez. And then inevitably they go and work for somebody else because they figure out what anybody who's been following the company for more than a month has figured out.
Yeah. Oh, that's tough. That's fine.
how did this become a path bash session? So that wasn't did you have anything else you wanted to say about messaging? Because I feel like messaging is sort of left in a wait and see phase because it's interesting, it's exciting, but I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it's very similar to like the Apple Watch App Store where you're like, this could be cool. It'll probably be cool. Yeah. I don't know how cool at this point. It could be pretty lame, but it would probably be cool.
I think what Facebook's got to do, and they're a big enough, smart enough company, I think they'll do this, is go out and actively search out partners and tell the partners, look, this is what we intended for it to be. So could you go ahead and build something like that so that, you know, we can use it as a showcase of our platform, and then next year really hit up and say, this is all the cool stuff that you can do with Messenger.
Yeah, we added all these new APIs to make your lives even easier. Enjoy. You're welcome.
Yeah, and then and give it 2 or 3 years to really get a roll on it.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, I like it. It's funny. I guess it's actually very appropriate. So one of my best friends, he Google chatted me Facebook messaged me and texted me this week. And finally, when he texted me, it was the Facebook was last. And finally on the Facebook message, I messaged back. I was like, dude, we have got to get this figured out. I can't have you be hitting me at multiple different, like, we've got one, I don't care what the channel of communication is, but we got to come up with one. Hey. And like, I realize his internet situation and phone situation is kind of weird. Like sometimes he's got internet. Sometimes he's just got the, like, he's just got the cell phone. Sometimes he's got, like, he's at work and can only use his phone. So, like, you know, or he can't use his phone. He can only use his computer, actually, is more exact. So it's like, I don't care what it is. But we just got to settle on one. I vote for Facebook because it's cross-platform and it works well. And I've been using it a lot, like, for different people. So I'm as much as I hate this, can we please stop using everything but Facebook?
Wow.
Stop it. I haven't had that conversation with my girlfriend yet, but it's getting a little overwhelming because she can hit me at like four different channels at the same time. Like, why is it so hard to just have it on one channel? What was I going to say? But I do think it's interesting that more and more I find people moving to Messenger and using that as a pretty solid platform just for communicating, just general purpose like texting, more so than like Google Chat and stuff like that. It's working for Facebook, and I think it'll work long term.
Kind of one of those weird things where, like, with iMessage and, you know, Android or Google Hangouts, right? It's like, they don't want to play nice together, and Facebook's like, oh yeah, we're not doing that. We'll just install on both of your operating systems and on the web. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
all of a sudden you go, oh, that's the Dropbox for messaging. They win.
Yes, that's the Dropbox. Yeah, it's such a great way to put it. That's a great analogy. It's exactly it. And it's like, I think iMessages could be something if they had an online terminal. If you could go to iCloud and get iMessages, and I understand why they don't do this, and this doesn't really work for their holistic strategy, but because it's a technical hurdle that Facebook and Google don't have to face, specifically because Google and Facebook store and read all your messages, and Apple doesn't. So it's kind of weird. And how do you make sure that you get a complete updated list?
You've got it on a Mac. You've got it on your iPhone. You've got it on an iPad.
Yeah, but you register each platform. And so what happens is when you send a message from your phone,
that's what they want. They want you to buy the hardware. They don't want you to go online.
I know. But it means that I'm going to use it. I can't use it as a dedicated, it's less comfortable as a dedicated system. I feel like what I'm trying to say is I feel like I would not use anything but iMessages. I would not even be tempted with Facebook and Google Chat if they had the online portal. If I could use it when I didn't have my phone around and I wasn't at a Mac, it would be, and I, like I said, I understand why you can't do this, but why they don't want to do this. And it's a technical hurdle. I actually think it's a technical hurdle. I do not think that it's a move to get you to buy hardware, especially with everything that they're doing with iCloud. It's the fact that every piece of hardware is a registered piece of hardware, and so they keep track of, like, when you send a Facebook, when you send an iMessage, it sends out, like, if you've got six devices, it sends out six different encrypted messages that are stored one for each device with a specific key for, you know, that will only work on that device. And so you couldn't just, like Facebook, where you can log in on any computer and not register it and it works because it's not encrypted and it's all stored centrally in one place. So it's just a different piece of technology, and it's not something that can't be overcome, but I can understand why Apple doesn't bother. That being said, Facebook seems to be the current winner in my humble opinion for my life. What was I going to say next? Oh, so that in less important, but I think equally exciting news, Facebook, it wasn't all they did this week, was messaging. It's pretty much the only important things they did this week, but it wasn't the only things. They also came out with Parse for the Internet of Things, which seemed to really bother the tech blogosphere because they hate the name, the Internet of Things. But it's pretty awesome. It's basically, there's, if you're following like the whole existence of like the Galileos and the Udus and the Arduinos of the world, there's a big movement to get them all on wireless protocols. But there's sort of this back end question of, where do you store the data? What do you actually connect with? What is the central? They're not, you know, you don't, do you have to set up your entire infrastructure to be able to just connect your Arduino Yun to the internet? And the answer, by and large, up to this point, has been yes. There are solutions. But and they're actually very good solutions, but it's still a pretty open market. There's not a clear winner.
Yeah.
And so Google came in and said, we'll be the clear winner. Or Facebook, geez. They came in and said, we'll be that guy. And Parse obviously is there, if you're not aware, is Facebook's kind of back end cloud infrastructure for it's a framework for building applications on many different platforms with a cloud back end. It's sort of your all-in-one stop for building a platform. It's if you're really building a serious app and you're going to be hiring 100 engineers, it's a terrible platform to go with. But if you're a lone developer and you want a really like, and you want all the different features and you want to get there quick, it's a very cool and exciting framework. And the addition of this, I think, could really help legitimize the platform. If you could get a bunch of like instructables out there on how to quickly do data logging for, you know, temperature and sensors and stuff, and sort of give the quick outline of how to use this in a smart way, I think you could get the maker community on board in short order. And because that's really the sort of people you're looking for is
right.
not, you know, a little more than hobbyists, a little less than industrials, sort of your early phase entrepreneurs. And that's what they're looking for the entire platform. And to get people on in the hardware component like that, it's a good move. And I'll probably look into it because I like microcontrollers and I think this is cool. It's exciting. That was the only other thing I cared about that we talked about this week.
That's fair. I was interested in the new commenting system, but ultimately decided the ones I use are fine.
Yeah, I get that.
I just it bugs me that they still own everything, and like I'm not quite ready to give that one up yet. Then if someone doesn't have a Facebook account, sorry, can't leave a comment.
Yeah, but who would want to have a Facebook account? Losers.
Seriously.
I do look at people who I'll be honest, like, there's definitely a time where it was cool to not have Facebook, and I feel like it's kind of coming back around to, you're just being annoying right now. Like, you just want to be special.
My favorite are the ones who are still in, like, oh, we have a shared email and shared Facebook account.
Yeah,
No, you are an individual. It's okay.
Yeah. I'm. You know what, James? We do have enough family and friends that listen to this show that I just saved myself what would almost certainly be a headache. So I'm not gonna make much comment.
I don't care.
That.
I don't live near any of them.
That's fair enough.
Yes. All right, dude, what's next? I don't even know. I'm
so
totally lost.
Finally, we get to talk about Apple.
Finally.
I only care about this because I've been part of my whole iOS thing is that I'm trying to learn a couple of different things at the same time. I'm trying to learn how to build and manage databases in a better way because that's important.
Fun.
I'm trying to learn how to build an API exchange for that because a database without a way to communicate it is useless.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to most of my time and energy is focused on learning iOS, but I'm
swiftly
spare time
learning iOS.
Mm-hmm. It's yeah, but basically it's like when I'm not sitting at my Mac and I'm reading about stuff, I'm reading about different scripting, you know, server-side scripting languages like Node and Python, but also a ton about different databases out there.
Yeah.
And MongoDB is a big one, and obviously if you know anything about databases, MySQL is huge. SQLite is big. PostgreSQL, I actually don't have any idea how you're Postgres, how you're supposed to say it. But it's SQL. They're the most advanced open source something or other database. So there's a. Do you know what the difference between SQL and NoSQL is?
No.
So, NoSQL actually is supposed to stand for not only SQL. The trick is that. The structured query language, SQL, was something that was thought up decades ago by IBM as they were sort of building up their first databases. And what they came up with is what they call the structured query language. And so it would be this universal set of things that you could do to interact with a relational database, and the idea of the relational database was this thing of you'd have these really structured things that there'd be a bunch of columns. Each table would be a type of information, like
yep.
animals in a zoo. Each column would be what's their name. When did they come? When were they born? When did they come to the zoo? What do they eat? Or when do they eat? Stuff like that. And then along the and then each row would be the actual piece of information. You know, the database. And
yeah.
The cool
so,
part
like for example, I built my own real estate management backend stuff, and so I have like tenant names is one reference database. I have property names is another reference database. I've got, you know, our rental units, I guess. And then I've got like a payment history, and that payment history references the tenant name and the property. And,
right.
And so they're all three combined create a useful table. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the whole deal with relational databases and what's cool about it is, like you said, you can quote unquote build these extra tables out of the raw tables.
Yeah.
But to really,
which I'm a master at, by the way.
Nice. But the way to get the most power out of it, and actually what the intention was originally, was that you would put as much information into a table as possible. And then you would build sub tables of information as you needed. Gotcha. But you would have these like really highly structured relational data, these databases with as much information as possible. And you just pull the little pieces that you need. But what most people end up doing is exactly what you just described,
yeah.
which is 100 discrete tables that you sort of build into a bigger table as you need, and it's not nearly as efficient. So effectively, what NoSQL is, not only SQL, was sort of this. It takes the ad hoc nature of what people want. It combines it with a lot of the in kind of odd ways the old structured languages of SQL,
mm-hmm.
and makes a really exciting. What's the word I'm looking for? Wild, wild west of databases. So there's not a specific standard that anybody is going for right now, which is important. It's just like wide open. But there were a couple of different specific there's a couple of major competitors out there. The Amazon Web Services, one of their big offerings is what they call is their DynamoDB, their Dynamo database. That is a NoSQL solution. They've got There's MongoDB, which is an open source thing that is really popular as well. And then another option out there that people were thinking was cool was FoundationsDB. Now, and all of these different, there's pluses and minuses that come with each of these. Obviously, Amazon Web Services is a huge cloud-based thing, and so their DynamoDB is exciting because it's free as for like the low tiers, and they're very excited. They're pushing it hard. I do want to mention this. The other reason why they're really pushing it is because it's a lot easier. Like MongoDB is built out of JavaScript, so it handles JSON objects with elegance. And JSON objects are the foundation of RESTful API, which is the API that Amazon pioneered as a communication between databases and their different front-end clients and stuff. So the advantage to all of this is that they all work really, really well with RESTful API, and you don't actually have to do any translation. You just kind of shoot it back and forth. That's why everybody's been pushing it like crazy. Well, there was Foundation. What they were doing that was really, really cool is they were focusing on ACID compliance, which is autonomous city, consistency, isolation, and durability. One of the things that standard SQL, like MySQL, features that they have is what they call ACID, which is the data can be, it's very consistent, it's isolated, it's durable. You're not going to lose it. You're not going to have duplications. You're not going to accidentally have things go away. And if it does, it's duplicatable, and it's very, very, very robust. You're nice. Not going to lose it. Mongo and DynamoDB don't have that as one of their top priorities, so you kind of have to do that on your own. You've got to be very, very careful about how you do this. Well, Foundations was a pretty cool technology in that it was this the whole goal of the platform was to kind of walk that line of the NoSQL wild, wild west of flexibility with ACID, which with the durability of ACID. And they were doing really good. People really liked it. So Apple bought it so that nobody else can have it.
Nice.
Yep. It's just... That happened. That, I mean, it's funny. I mean, like I've been reading a lot about this stuff the last month or two, and Foundations has keep coming up as like one of the up and comers that people are excited about and asking about. And the more I've read about it, the more I'm like, man, I should really look into this and think about it. And then, boom, I was right. I really should have been looking into it and thinking about it. It turns out it's a pretty solid platform, I guess. Yeah, at current December 2014, AWS pricing and including enterprise foundation DB licenses for all 488 cores. Foundation DB has raised $22.7 million in two rounds from SV Angels, Sutter Hill, and Crunch Fund. Crunch Fund partner Michael Arrington founded TechCrunch. So they're gonna make a pretty penny off of that. I want to build something like that, James. I want to build something like that. I don't know how to. So I'm trying to learn.
I feel you, dude. I feel you. I don't know the answer either.
There's this idea that I'm working on. There's this idea that I've been working on, and it's my first post to Medium is sort of it's part one of what will be a series that I call where I talk about the idea of a magic hammer, and it's a tool that you know, each tool that you have in your life has each tool that's out there has a purpose. It's designed to do something. Some do it better, do that task better than others, but usually it has a specific task. Well, the Magic Hammer's specific task is it's designed to build tools. And it can build the tool that you need when you need it. And so it's sort of, I'm starting out in that one. Hopefully I'll write some more posts and actually flesh this idea out more. But the idea of what is a magic hammer, what defines it, what are its characteristics, and what does it mean by the future? And I think Foundations DB is something that can solidly be considered a magic hammer. And there's some real power when you build something like that. But I'll probably talk about that more as time goes on. That was a teaser to get you to go and check out my Medium post.
Yeah, that worked. I want to find out now.
So the next thing I want to talk about, because I can't go an entire 2 hours without talking about Apple. So one of the big complaints about the Apple Watch is that it won't have GPS. And
right.
And Apple finally is pushing back against that. It still won't have GPS, but that doesn't mean it won't have distance tracking. And it's one of those things where as soon as I read it, I just sit there and I go, how the heck have I had a Fitbit for almost 2 years and they haven't managed to get this piece of technology down? Because it just seems like it wouldn't be that hard. What the Apple Watch does is you carry your phone with you, and when you go on a run, it will track your distance and your steps. And they use those two pieces of information to automatically calculate your stride at different paces, and they can come up with your distance traveled. Now, Fitbit does it the opposite way. You calculate your stride, and then they will give you your distance based off of that. But who measures their stride off and then actually – like who actually does that? Not very many people. Apple, they go the other direction. They do it automatically with you, and pretty much everybody that they've had testing it out says, yeah, it works great. After a couple of runs with your phone, if you don't bring your phone with you, it will tell you exactly how far you've gone based on how many steps you've taken and the speed at which you're running, because they know that. Because they can figure that out just based off of the few sensors that they have. And they said what's really cool about it is because it doesn't rely on GPS after a while, it can tell you how far you've run on a treadmill, which is always something that I've, you know, as somebody who runs on a treadmill a lot, I've always been irritated by the fact that it's like, you know, GPS wouldn't work anyways. Like what's the big, doesn't really affect me at all. So this is not necessarily me trying to sell an Apple Watch. I'll do plenty of that as time comes on, I'm sure. But this is more of a, come on, Fitbit. Like, this is such an obvious thing to do. How has nobody done this yet? It just drives me nuts when the obvious answer has been just hanging out there. How did nobody do this? Anyways.
I'm just annoyed that my Pebble can't do any of that. Like, come on.
You got to get one of the new ones, man. They've been raising money like crazy.
Yeah, they did well. I almost pulled the trigger and decided to not. So
You're gonna wait for the Apple Watch.
I'm gonna wait. I'm gonna wait till round two. But I'm still gonna wait.
Fair enough.
Cool, man. So I saw you signed up for Meerkat.
I did.
So last week.
Right.
This week is Periscope.
What is Periscope? What is Meerkat? Can we talk about that? We haven't talked about it. I feel like it was. What is going on right now? Okay, so I'm pretty sure I get what Meerkat is. It is a live blogging tool that posts the link to. No.
Do you remember it's Qik? Qik. When the iPhone was first launched, they figured out how to.
Oh, I do remember
how
them.
To use your camera to take a lot of photos, to capture grainy, choppy video, and use your microphone to capture video before Apple had video, and you could create a video and then quickly upload it to their server, and it would post a tweet that you did your video. I think it technically had a live component to it as well, but the issue was the video quality was not fantastic and it was not real time. And,
but it got a lot of, made a lot of noise because the original iPhone didn't have video capture.
Right.
And they workarounded it.
Yes, exactly. Well, we fast forward some number of years. Your phones are faster, better, does video quite well, I would argue. And self speeds are faster as well with 4G LTE and
I haven't noticed
such. And so therefore, they're also real time. And so as a result, it appears that
the time is now
for these live streaming videos to kind of take off again.
Right.
So, Meerkat was created, I think they said they made it in 8 weeks, and I think the app feels like it. Periscope has been in development for a few years. They actually started out with a question, which is, why isn't there a way to see what's happening right now anywhere in the world? And their original idea was to do photos, and they ultimately decided that Instagram has done pretty well at that. And so they finally said, there are over 1 billion smartphones distributed around the world. Though smartphone owners have already shown an immense affinity to share photos and videos, the cameras on these phones are still an underutilized resource. What if there was a way to turn the supply into a distributed, on-demand workforce? Very fluffy language to say.
Yeah.
What if you could share what you were doing with a video in real time? So Meerkat, if I remember correctly, it does post to Twitter, and then you have to have the app downloaded, and you can watch the video. Can you comment on the video? I can't remember.
I don't know, man.
Okay.
I opened it up. You know what my problem? Okay, before I won't mention my problem until we're there. Let me open it. Tweet live video. Go to the stream. No, don't stop it. Stop. Don't stream this. Are you sure you want? Yes, I want to end this stream.
Oh,
this
dude, you're live now.
I know. Save this stream. No, go home. Go home. I got 0 followers.
Yep.
I have no idea what's going on with this, man. I gotta spend more time.
So one of the big problems with Meerkat is that also it's like when it's live, it's live. When it's done, it's done. So
right.
There's a few things that Periscope does that helps with that. Number one, it's not 100% ephemeral. After you record a video, you can have the option to have it hang around for like 24 more hours. So even if you miss a live stream, no big deal. You can catch up and see what it was. Another thing which I think is kind of cool is people can make comments and then you can read them. And again, because network connections are fast enough now, it actually is pretty fast. And so it happens pretty much in real time. And then the other thing is you can like the video an infinite number of times. And so you can just like keep saying, and a little hearts will bubble up, kind of like soda bubbles on the video to encourage you. Oh, yeah, people like this and stuff. I don't know if you have to have the app downloaded or not to watch it. But yeah, so, and Periscope, well, in development, got bought by Twitter.
Yes. Well, it's an interesting because pretty much like 2 weeks before South by Southwest, everybody was like, Meerkat was taken off, right? Yep. All of a sudden it was on the scene. People were starting to talk about it. The tech chamber was starting to chatter, and everybody was like, Twitter needs to buy these guys, and now it has to happen because they're the future, and they're going to eat Twitter's lunch if Twitter doesn't get on it. And Twitter sort of didn't say anything, kept their mouth shut. And then South by Southwest happened, and Meerkat was the cool guy at school. And I had a couple of friends that were there and were blogging about it and everything. And that's when I decided, okay, I guess I have to take this seriously. If if I want this to be a serious endeavor for me, then I should probably pay attention to this because something seems to be happening, which is when I downloaded it. And then they bought Periscope, and everybody goes, ah, that makes sense. They bought a better version of the same platform. I'll probably download that. I'll download that one too. Why not?
It's free.
That's good. I like how you throw that out there as though it would be possible for them to launch a product like that and not have it be free.
Yeah, so I guess the real question is, do you have to have the app to watch the video?
I don't know.
All right, here, let's see here. I'll commit to a live stream. You got notifications for when I start doing it, right?
On Twitter?
Yeah. Like when I tweet something out, do you get a notification when I do that?
No. I think I get notifications if I'm paying attention to anything that has... Twitter can't notify me about anything.
Okay. So you got to be on Twitter then.
Yes. So I'm on Twitter right now.
How do I flip my phone around?
Nobody knows.
I want to go... Twitter post on. I seriously want to show my. I want to like have it go backwards, but. All right. Well, whatever. Start broadcast. Swipe down to stop. Double tap to flip camera. Got it.
Nice.
There you go. Dude. All right. I'm live streaming this bad boy.
Just bump me to the download this app.
Ah, bummer. So you are listening to the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast right now. Actually, I'm recording it with my brother. There he is right there.
Yeah, what's up? Hey, how you doing?
They can't hear you. That's okay, though. So we were just testing out the SAP in the middle of the podcast. You can always go to twitter.com/JamesFurlough. I guess for those of you listening to the podcast, you got like 24 hours to see what this video looks like. All right, I'm ending it. Swipe down to stop.
Stop broadcast. Oh, man, I was just downloading it, too.
Uploading for replay. There you go. Untitled. It's 44 seconds. No replay viewers. No live viewers. Oh, man. That was lame.
That was... This is the worst app ever. Who would do this?
Anyways, there you go.
That is funny. That's cool.
Yeah, so the whole live streaming, the live video space is heating up again.
I will say this. I think part of the reason, I'm positive part of the reason why this is hard for me is because I know what sort of person does this, and I'm not that sort of person. And it was so obvious because so I was looking for an excuse to use Meerkat. I kept calling it Meerkat for the longest time. I felt somebody like point out, it's not Meerkat, it's Meerkat. What? Oh my gosh, you're right.
It's cool.
And so I went to a concert on last Wednesday evening in the city, and very excited, a band that I've been following for a long time. They're doing this tiny little concert. There was like 50 people in the venue. It was super cool. And I was like, I should live stream this. And I held up the live stream and I was like, this is really lame. I'm not even paying attention to the concert, and put it back away. And it's that classic thing of, your kid is walking for the first time. Are you watching your kid walk for the first time, or are you watching your phone record your kid walk for the first time? Mm-hmm. And is it better to be totally present, or is it better to capture the moment for durability's sake?
Here's the crazy part. It gets even worse than that. When you have a lot going on or you have a lot to remember, what's the first thing they tell you to do?
Write it down.
Why?
Because it helps you. You don't have to remember it. You can reference it back later.
Yes. The exact same thing happens when you take a photo or video or something. Your mind goes, oh, cool. It's saved somewhere, so I don't have to remember the event. So you actually remember it less by recording it.
Yeah, and it's so true. When I'm like, when I look back, it's cool to have the videos of concerts I went to and stuff, but it doesn't remind me of it perfectly at all. It does. I mean, it jogs the memory a bit, but usually what it does is it jogs the memories of other songs and other moments during the concert that I was there, which is, you know, that's not bad. And it's not easy. And, you know, and like I said, the sort of person that does that is somebody who wants to be a streamer. They want to be a broadcaster. They want to be somebody who captures. And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. It's just I feel like a lot of people who I feel like I would fall into the category of what most people would fall into, which is, I don't have a ton of – people don't watch what concerts I – you know, don't watch my videos so they can see the concerts I go to. I got a freaking iPhone, and I'm like, you know, have my hand up in the air and shaking the whole time. And, like, you know, it's not a high-quality video. I'm sharing a moment of this, and if you like the band, you'll like my video because you're like, I'd like that band too. We share something in common. You don't like it because it's a high-quality video, you know? And so it's like – for me, I get 15 seconds of a concert, just enough to get like the one chorus, and then I'm back to paying attention.
Yeah.
Whereas the live streaming thing, whereas a lot of people just sit there and record the entire song with their hand in the air, and the live streaming thing is going to be the same thing, I think. There are some people who that's their deal. That's how they make a living. And yeah, you should be live streaming the whole thing. But I get the feeling that long term, you know, this probably will go through a popularity spike and I predict it will get bigger, but I think that it has less durability as a activity than taking pictures and taking videos for post-processing, momentary things, small clips, because the whole thing with live streaming is it requires you to do it for an extended period of time so that you can get more people sharing it and it resonates longer. Which I understand why Twitter would be into that.
Yeah, Twitter's definitely into the here and now. Meerkat does allow you to also schedule, like, hey, I'm going to be live streaming in an hour. Otherwise, you run into the problem, which is, like, the nice part about how social media works right now is, like, when you have time, you're in control, you decide when to look. Whereas with a live stream, it's like, oh, it started. Let me drop what I'm doing and look right now. And, you know, and that's not as popular.
You know, if for the immediacy of news, I see the advantage to it. That's a pretty good platform for that. You know, I think it's sort of like Twitter itself, where for individuals it's not a huge advantage, but for certain outlets it's very, very, very important. And I think you're going to see Periscope go the same way, and so it's going to get attention because the sort of people that need it as a tool are the sort of people that are blogging about it. I don't think you're going to see a huge uptake of casual users using it.
Public figures using it.
Yeah. And I could see not necessarily Apple using it to do it, but companies like Apple saying, we're going to be live streaming Apple's actually a terrible example of this, but I could see Facebook have somebody in the audience with it on and have one of your live blogs be through Periscope or Meerkat when they eventually buy them / try to build a competitive platform. You know, I could see that. I could see it. It'll take its place as part of the ecosystem, but I just don't think it's going to be a giant social network thing.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree.
But
real quick here, apparently if your device has a screen that's under 10 inches, it is for play, not for work, and therefore Microsoft will give you Office for free.
Woohoo!
Without all the editing features, but you'll be able to create a document and do other stuff with it.
That's cool. I'm glad they're doing that. I mean, like, trying to figure out how to still make money on that platform is important, but, you know, giving it away for useful. There's a weird balance that Microsoft has got to learn to walk in. I think they need to err on the side of too much free stuff at this point. and try to recapture some territory and don't cede any more territory to Google and Apple on it, you know, and that's an important device range where the expectation for that sort of a thing is that it is free now. And I think they can still pull off the idea that on full size screens, you know, AKA business class stuff where there's actual money involved, they can justify still charging it for as a full size platform. But yeah, for the mobility stuff, I think they're moving in the right direction there.
Yeah.
Nice job, Satya. I believe in you. Mm-hmm. The last thing I want to say is that pretty soon here, you're going to be able to store all those movies that you wanted to store on your phone. What's the company called? Oh, jeez. So 3D NAND technology, which is this is crazy. I could talk about this for days because I actually work with the stuff that does this, and I won't. Thank you for shaking your head. but basically, it's this cool 3D silicon processing stuff where they're going to theoretically be able to make these. Micron said the chips would be used to make gum stick size M.2 PCIe SSDs up to 3.5 terabytes in size and 2.5-inch SSDs up to 10 terabytes of capacity, on par with the latest hard drives. Yeah, a 10-terabyte hard drive. It's nuts. And honestly, like the gum stick one's really important because that's the sort of thing that would go into your MacBook, MacBooks, like your super tiny ones, and that's 3.5 terabytes, and Apple will only charge you $7,000 for it. but this stuff's not going to be cheap for very long because the process of making these multi-layered, the 48-layered end-to-end yielding stuff is wicked expensive because it's very, very, very new. But it's cool because, like, all this sort of stuff in 10 years, it'll be so commonplace you'll be able to buy it for pennies as they pay off the capital expense of all the equipment. So it's cool. It's the future, man. It's coming.
It is coming. I'm excited.
Moore did not see this dimension of expansion. That's actually true.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it actually it's because it was all about he said that you'd be able to fit twice as many you'd be able to fit two transistors in the place of one transistor every 18 months.
Yeah.
And that was the direction that he saw it. Well, that's really great math to if everything's on a single wafer substrate, then the expectation of where that's going is really linear because it's not linear. It's exponentially, it's a geometric expansion as it goes up, but it's easy to predict. And that's why everybody got really excited because it gave this really predictable roadmap. So investors were able to get in and engineers were able to get in. And so everybody knew what to expect. But as the minute you say, now there's two layers, things don't have to get smaller for you to double in size, which actually changes changes the geometry. You know, obviously, you're going from 2D to 3D, and it's just another dimension of how, you know, when we talk about the edge of Moore's law, when you get to this, what is the smallest theoretical transistor? That's the edge. You can't keep doubling every 18 months at that point. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean, is it the end of this great period of expansion of stuff? Well, not necessarily, but it does mean that at least from that particular geometric dimension, we got to change.
And you're frozen. That must mean we're done. Oh, man. Bummer. Well, it was a good thought. And so I guess on that note, we're going to have to call it since he is not coming back. All right. Let me normally I would have him talking. Well, I switch over the audio, but I'll do it anyways. All right. Well, I guess Matthew's done, so there you go. Thank you, everybody, for joining us, and thank you for listening to episode 183. Matthew's going to go to bed after this because he's nice and tired. But we really do appreciate all of you listening. And don't forget to check out our show notes on furloughbros.com. Again, this is episode 183. And my name is James Furlough, and my tough mutter brother, yeah, I did that. I did that right. Yeah. Is Matthew Furlough. And so we will talk next time. Thank you.